Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Bring a little sunshine indoors with the exciting new arrivals in store or online at harrycurry.com.
Go over to Mary now. Good afternoon, Mary.
Hello, Katie. How are you doing? How are you getting on? How are things?
Things are great, Mary. Mary, will you hang on there a minute? Because I want people to remind people of this moment, which was putting people's hearts crossways on Saturday evening.
We're going level again in the Munster final. This epic encounter that goes on and on and on. Darragh Fitzgibbon from Charleville, right on the border between Limerick and Cork. It's 2:27 to 1:30. And for the first time ever, a Munster hurling final is going to be decided by penalty pucks, and the boos are ringing out for the supporters.
Yeah, look. I don't know. The greatest game in the world, once again, showing it again here tonight. Limerick and Cork have given it everything. I feel it's hard that it's going to penalties. But look, I suppose everyone will say on the programme, it says at the start, if this is full-time, I'm saying everyone's going to penalties, and they knew it was. So here we are now, lads.
That was, of course, Pádraig Lodge and Shane McGrath there, co-commentators on that match on Saturday. Absolute heart-stopping match. But, yeah, I can hear the audiences or the spectators' response when it went to penalties at the end. Mary, were you there, Mary?
No, Katie, I was there. It was a brilliant match. But Jesus, why did they not have a replay? For the players, they gave everything through the match from both sides. You know, the penalties, whoever invented these penalties, have they ever paid hold on themselves? It's a cruel way to get to lose, you know, or what, don't fair play to Cork, but like the heartbreak for the players on both sides to go to penalties. It should have gone to another game.
Now, Mary, I suppose, complete disclosure, you are a Limerick fan.
Oh, holy Jesus, I am a Limerick fan, but I wouldn't be judged Cork now either, in all fairness. I am a Limerick fan. You know, it was heartbreaking. They gave everything. Both teams, there's nothing between the two teams. So, no, but it's the penalty. It's the first time ever in a game had got the penalties. Then, unfortunately, Limerick had to be involved in it. Sorry.
Well, I suppose the thing is, Limerick is always involved in it.
Yeah.
I was just counting up. 16 finals you've been in the last 7 years. You've won six Munster, six Munster finals, five All-Irelands, three National Leagues, three Munster Leagues. Sure, you have no notion at all of what it feels like to lose in any circumstances.
But it's not the losing side of it. It's the penalties. I would think the penalties, it should have went to another game. They should have put it on to another game, because imagine what the GA would have got. They could have full Croke Park if they took the Munster final to Croke Park in 2 weeks' time. Everyone would get the banter of it.
Oh, should that... I saw Jess Cahill actually tweeting that on Saturday. He was saying, you know, does it have to end like this? Imagine the anticipation and the crack and the buzz if we were looking forward to another final like that.
Another game, yeah. It would give everybody a lift. But it was just down to the pin. It's a cruel way to finish a game. If there's anyone out there listening is over the GA, would they listen to think again? To change their mind finishing a game like that. It's a cruel way.
It's cruel.
And for the teams, the heartbreak.
But also,
and everything for the players.
Oh, the players though, Mary. I did feel awful sorry for every one of them stepping forward. That walk up with their hurl to take that penalty, like it's the pressure.
The pressure on it, like, and stuff, and it's cruel. It's a cruel way, you know. But look, if anyone there, the GA are listening, look, put on your thinking caps again. It was the best game ever of Holland. Never mind in Munster, in the whole country. It was fantastic.
Oh, it was.
But it's just down to the penalties. You know, for the players, the mental health after this, and how do they feel after going home and the missing the what's going on. It's cruel.
I'm hearing, Mary, that you've been advised that the games mightn't be good for your health.
Oh, my God, no. I get very excited. I get very excited, doctors, but that's me anyway.
But do you still go, Mary?
Oh, yeah, I do. Yeah, I would still go. Yeah, I would still go. Do you know, okay, but I get very, very, very excited. The heart goes racing. It isn't good for the blood pressure.
It's not, no. Definitely not the game that we had yesterday or on Saturday.
Definitely not, anyway. But, like, you know, like, we can't. Our Limerick team, they're the best team that ever was invented in Ireland. So, and thanks down to John Kiley and the boys. They did us proud the other day. They did us proud. And so, and look, we're on and forward now to Dáil Éireann. You know what? We might meet Cork again in Dáil Éireann.
I'd sure that's the thing. I mean, you're down but not out, for sure.
Oh, my God, it's true. It's not. It's just a disappointment. It's the thing of, I suppose, being the first game with the penalties. So it's a cruel way. It really, really is. It's a cruel way for the players. It's not for us, where we just the spectators. It's the players themselves. So, no, they gave everything. The two teams, there was nothing between them.
But that's where we're left with the split season, isn't it? I mean, this is the yeah. problem. They that's what they're telling us. They've no dates. They can't find the dates for these replays.
Yeah, but go back to what we had. Why don't you go back to what we had? Who changed it? Who was the bright spark that changed all this? Go back to what we had. It was way better and having all out in September, and it's good for young ones at schools and everything. The schools get involved in everything. It brings on the GA to everybody. To every walk of life.
But sure, how are you going to make all the money from the concerts in August, Mary, if you have the championship running through up till September?
Come here. Ireland, GA is Ireland, and the concerts can come after. They can the concerts any time.
Mary, will you stay there 1 second? I have a Cork fan on the other line that might disagree with your description of Limerick there. John, good afternoon.
Hi, Katie, how are you? No, I wouldn't disagree with anything. She said, in fairness, this has been, and I'm not just cry-tumping because we beat them Saturday night. I mean, this has been a fabulous Limerick team. I went to my first Munster final Limerick in 1972, and I haven't missed many since. And look, this Limerick team is on par with the great Kilkenny team, and I'm not just blowing them up. Like, look, they're a fabulous team, what they've done in the last 5 or 6 years. But I'd have to agree with her. It, not alone is it cruel, but it's against the whole ethos of hurling, of our sport. I mean, like someone said to me this morning, even if it went to scoring 65s instead of penalties, you've got 50 hurling matches, and there's always a few 65s, you know, 70s always, but you could go to top tier 50 hurling matches, and there might never be a penalty. Like, and look, you said it there in your last sentence, it's all down to the split season that was brought in, the much lauded split season, which is supposed to be great, and these are some of the downsides of it now, and we saw it last year. Even after the All-Ireland final, I was a bit surprised because they said after what happened last year that in future All-Ireland finals wouldn't go to extra time. Cork and Clare did last year. They'd go to replays. I, in my innocence, thought that might apply all to sort of provincial finals, that you'd have a replay.
Well, I mean, especially the Munster final. I would honestly...
Well, yeah, next Saturday now, there's a huge game in Cork Park, and the whole country will be talking about the game in Cork Park. We finished ours, you could say, in the dark Saturday night. Next Saturday now, Cork Park, we have a huge rugby game there. Like, fair play to the rugby crowd, they'll feel Cork Park. We could have had a replay next Saturday. We could have had a replay. I know people say, it'll upset fixtures and upset everything. And but the point is, look, I was against the split season from the start. People called me an old fogey. They said, look, your last listener there said, what was wrong with the system we had before with All Ireland? Look, there was fierce problems, I know, because there was club matches being postponed, you know, because of inter-county players not being released. And you might play the first round of a club championship in March and you mightn't play the next round until August. And that wasn't fair on club players, but I think we've gone from one extreme to the other. And with the last 2 years, I've been calling on the GA, I'm like a gong booming in the wind, that they should do some kind of a cost-benefit analysis. I mean, the promotional value of having a replay. What is the promotional value? Like, we're in the middle now. We play the Munster final in the middle of the leaving set. The All-Ireland final will be over in the month of July, just when all youngsters and everything would be on holidays. Like, what we had for 100 years, All-Ireland finals in September, every sporting organisation would have given their right hand and left hand for it. We had the month of September to ourselves. As she said, lads were going back to school. Limerick hadn't been in an All-Ireland final since the split season came in because of COVID, where the young fellas in the month of September are urging on their heroes. Why? Because the All-Ireland final is over in July.
But John, just
forgotten.
But what about, like, you know, the reasons that was put forward to introduce the split season? And we're talking there about the pressure on the players, you know, being involved in these penalty shootouts. Like, this was about easing pressure on players. It was about player welfare. Is that not a consideration that should be part of
No, sorry, sorry. The reason the split season was brought in was because they wanted to give certainty to club players. What was happening. You played your Cork and Limerick could play the first round of the Munster Championship. There could be a club match fix for the following week. If it was a draw, there'd be a replay. Club match would go off. So players were being chopped and changed. And OK, they wanted to give them certainty. But now, what we have is a situation now where you have the county season now running from, you could say, the start to the end of July. You've got no important club matches at all during the months of May, June and July, the prime months of the year. In the club season now starts at the end of July, start of August, and the whole thing is crammed into 6 or 8 weeks. Now, I've been crying always since this thing started. Why can't we have a dual system? The county teams play the league and the championship from April right through to the end of September, right over that six-month period. And during that, you have 4 2-week breaks to play a club championship where all the players would be free to play with their clubs. Why wouldn't that work? Why, the reason it wouldn't work is because, Katie, because the inter-county managers probably wouldn't release the players. Simple as that. And that's a situation that's not being tackled by anybody in GAA, in headquarters. I mean, why couldn't we have a dual system where the club championship would progress along during the summer and the inter-county championship would progress as well? You'd have your All-Ireland finals in September. You'd have the latter stages, quarter-finals, semi-finals of your county championships then after that. And it would mean for club players, you'd have hurling the whole year long. But obviously, the big barrier to that is club panels now, county panels are formed now in December. They go into training in December. And no manager wants to leave those players out of his sight until they're finished in whether it's the Munster Championship or the Leinster Championship.
Worried about injury and all sorts.
Have the GAA done any cost-benefit analysis to it? I don't think so. Have they decided how much promotion we have lost because we threw away September? I don't think so. Are they willing to do it? I don't think so. Why? Because nobody in the GAA wants to say, lads, we made a mistake and we were wrong in this. Having a replay of a Munster final. Forget about now to bring in millions for the Munster Council. We know all that. We know that. But having said that, the promotional value, we haven't that many huge hurling games. There's only 6-7 hurling games now and the inter-county hurling season is over. Before last Sunday, 60% of all the inter-county hurling teams in the country, 60% of them, were gone out of competition. Their next game would be next February. How is that promoting hurling?
John, take a break.
We haven't a Champions League. We haven't a European Cup like they have in soccer and rugby. So the Intercounty Championship is our shop window. So we should promote it and boost it and elongate it and, you know, promote as much as possible, you know?
John, go back to where we came in, if you will, for a minute. The penalty shootout.
Mm.
Is that, and particularly hurling, because, as you say, it's not part of, penalties are not something you generally see much
And the other thing about it is, this is the first time now there was a Munster final finished that way, a Munster senior hurling final. I recall, I'm not sure now, was it a final or a semi-final at minor under 20 grade, maybe 2 years ago since the system came in, and it went to penalties as well, and one team beat the other team by the odd goal. You'd hate to be the young fella that was in goals in that match and he was the goalie that lost the penalty. That's why I think the shooting of 65s would be a much fairer system. You either get him or you don't get him. There's no such suggestion as, oh, he was the goalie that left in three or he failed to stop that one and that was an easy shot. And 65s or 70s, as they were called and go, in other words, long-distance free-taking, is part and parcel of our game. Huge part of our game. But you wouldn't have the pressure on two people. Your pressure maybe on one person taking the 65.
It's even more pressure on one person.
Nobody is blaming Nicky Quaid or Patrick Collins for the goals conceded last Saturday night. But you're not taking 65s. But, like, penalty taking is not part and parcel of our traditional game. I know the game has changed and you can't have traditional time. And from a television point of view, a spectator point of view, of course, it makes fabulous television.
I was going to say, people say nobody likes to see, but everybody loves to see penalty shootouts. They're the same in the Europa League last night. The audiences go way up for penalty shootouts.
Yeah, and of course, like the big difference is, we'd say people that take penalties in soccer, rugby, like, you'd be talking about pressure. I suppose it eases the pressure a small bit if you're earning 20,000 a week or 50,000 a week. That certainly eases the pressure. And in soccer and rugby, you're probably taking penalties regularly in games. They're not a huge feature. Of course, you do have penalties in hurling from time to time. But if you did a survey of 50 or 60 inter-county or club hurling games, you might have 30, 40, 65s. You might have 4 or 5 penalties. So coming at the end of an enthralling match, I just think, like, you held it Saturday night, both sets of fans, the minute it was announced, like, they spoke, they were there since 5 o'clock, they spoke their voices when it was announced the penalties, which was exciting. The booing that ran out, in other words, they were saying, in the name of God Almighty, why can't we have these two teams play again? And look, if that was replayed in Limerick or in Cork at 11 o'clock next Saturday morning, the place would be full again, and to give other people a chance. Like, promotion, we in the GAA, and I'm involved in the GAA with over 50 years, in as regards promotion of our games, we're in the halfway place. We're in the dark. We just don't do things right. There was no minor game there Saturday. There was Gavin James, great singer, brilliant. But why can't we, the minor games are gone, played separately, two minor semi-finals in Turlesnicks, and it was always a path and pass with the minor game at the senior game. And I know things have to change, and people said, geez, John Arnold wouldn't change anything. He's living in the past. Maybe I'm living in the past. But like, the point is, we shouldn't be getting rid of things just because they're from the past. There's certain traditions we should keep, and we shouldn't be aping other organisations.
Yeah. Well, you do make a good point, though, there, John, is that it's one thing to put pressure on somebody when it's their job and they're getting paid, as you say, and well paid to take that pressure. But for amateur players, you know, who have to go home to their, you know, to their job and turn up at their job on Monday morning, having been the person to walk up and maybe miss the penalty in those circumstances. That's Mary, isn't that? I mean, that's part of
savage. It's cruelty. It's cruelty.
Yeah. Mary, are you still with us?
Yes. I'm here.
That fact that I know, and in fairness to John Kiley, he made a point of coming out and saying this was not down to the three players who missed in that shootout.
Oh yeah,
So in fairness, he's trying to do that. But I mean, inevitably, you're going to feel it personally if you're one of those players.
Oh, you are. Normally, your heart has to go out to him, like. You know, it has to be, and anyone to criticise them shouldn't be following GA. Do you know, it's like, I'll say again, it was a cruel way.
Yeah.
Like, it's like that man there said that, when they go to a replay, it's true, even down to Cork at 11 o'clock next afternoon, the place will be full.
Yeah.
And what will it bring down to Cork? Everybody, do you know what I'm saying? It's very cruel the way, so that's what I'm annoyed about. It is, you know, they might put on their thinking caps again.
Yeah. Stay there, Mary, and stay there, John. I have another John on the line. John Howard, good afternoon.
Good afternoon to you, yes.
Where do you stand on this?
I really am so annoyed over this penalty shootout. I think we had such an amazing game, full of skill, full of the best you could see in hurling. And we're trying to promote hurling all over Ireland. Take it, for instance, the Kildare team that happened to win the Joe McDonagh Cup. First time ever to win. And that was through pure promotion to a number of small number of clubs in Kildare that they achieved that. Now, you can imagine how many extra thousand would be looking at a replay if this had gone to a replay. And how many extra kids would be taking up hurleys on the next day and wanting to do the same. The GAA have really lost the run of themselves doing something like finishing a Munster final or any final like that with penalty shootout. Bring it back on again. RTE, I'm sure, would have been delighted to have thousands of extra people tuning into it for a replay. And so would everybody else associated with hurling, or not even associated with hurling, but who really enjoy the skills, looking at it, supporting it throughout the country. So I say they've missed a golden opportunity.
We know, again, we'll go back. I mean, what they're saying is they simply do not have the dates left on their fixture calendar now.
That's another big bugbear of mine. I think they have done a great injustice to our games, to the promotion of our games, football and hurling, by narrowing it down so much. There are very few clubs playing championship matches, let me tell you, at this time of the year. So, and they're saying they must give the club time to do all this. The clubs won't be doing it until August. So why not let it run in for another week or two, even if they had to, for a replay. I can't understand narrowing it back from September. And even if they kept it in to the end of August or the first Sunday or first weekend in September, it would do an awful lot for promotion of our games. They're losing a great opportunity in Ireland at this time. But for hurling especially with the standard there is in hurling, and particularly in Munster, it's just a joy for all of us, no matter whether we never took up a hurler in our life or not, to witness that.
OK, stay there, John, because I've got somebody who might take a different view. Pat, good afternoon, Pat.
Hi, Katie, how are you? I'm listening to the chat and enjoying it, but I think all the counties that participated this year in the championship were well aware of the rules, that the game would be finished on the same day by playing extra time, and if it was still level, they'd be taking penalties to finish it. I'm not saying whether I agree or disagree with it. I remember back in the early 90s, in the middle 90s, when Cork and Wexford played three times to decide a league final, three games, and the cost and expense of going to three games had to be taken into consideration as well.
But I don't think nobody would complain, would they, to have to go to see another game?
Question of complaining. I think rules are there, and if people want to change the rules, there's a mechanism whereby they can do that as well. But there were five players from each side taking penalties at the end of the game. Five. You had five chances to score against the goalkeeper. I mean, that was exciting as well, you know, obviously, you know. And the losing team will always be, aggrieved by the way of losing the final in that manner, you know. For a final to be decided on penalties, it was the first time out, you know. I think it left a bad taste in a lot of traditional people's mouths, but nevertheless, I think it was still exciting, you know. And both teams had equal chances to win it in the penalty shootout. That's my point.
What about the point we were raising there, that is all very well, again, because we're very used to obviously seeing penalty shootouts in soccer, you know, in football matches. As I say, there was a big one again and a big exciting Europa League match last night. But they're professionals. I mean, it is an unbelievable pressure to put on amateur players, to put it on their heads, you know. You could be, and the way it happened last night, there was a number of misses, but you could be the only one.
Well, there was tremendous pressure on Dara Fitzgibbon in the extra time to score that 65. I mean, that was enormous pressure on him, you know, to score a 65 to level the match, you know. But I mean, there's pressure all the time in matches like that, you know. But for €50 a seat in the Mackey Stand, you know, it was a bit steep as well, you know. And it's not the greatest of stands to sit and watch a match in, because the seats hadn't even graduated enough to see it, you know, to see the pitch.
Yeah.
You know? And the facilities were not great in the Gaelic grounds for the Munster final, in my opinion. It's just my opinion.
Yeah, and they it goes around, doesn't it, goes around a number of venues year after year.
Well,
so
I mean,
there
was a home and away agreement between Limerick and Cork. That's why there's a Limerick. Otherwise, I dare say the final would have been probably in Turles if there wasn't a home and away agreement between Cork and Limerick, if they reached the month's final, you know?
Yeah.
And that's an old agreement going back for a while, you know. But that's something that should be looked at as well, you know.
But you think that actually penalties are an exciting part of it now?
Well, I think they're part and parcel of the game, you know. And if people don't like something, you know, there's a mechanism for changing rules all the time, you know. They're not cast in stone, you know. They can be changed, you know.
Pat, thanks for that. I was wondering, would we get somebody who were in favour of them? Connie, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Katie. I just want to qualify before I make any comment that I only saw the highlights. I was at a funeral on Sunday. I'm not affiliated to any football club, and I'm not a huge an avid sporting fan. I watch a variety of different sports. But clearly, Saturday, it was the mother and father of all games.
Sure
it was very, very good, very exciting. And my only thought afterwards was for the individual, as I always feel after a penalty shootout, for the individual who missed the penalty or for the goalkeeper. And I just think that it is a huge burden to carry. It's an outrageous way to end a game. And a game that was absolutely brilliant in every which way. I just think that, you know, it ran into extra time. And I think that maybe the rule should be that if a game runs on into extra time, there's no score, it should be allowed to run on then, declare the extra time over, and now it runs on to sudden death. Now, there's loads of people out there that would possibly disagree with that and would be already given out about me even suggesting it. But, I mean, my concern afterwards was, I mean, it didn't matter to me which team won. I'm delighted for one or other. Delighted that Cork came out on top. But it is a team. It's a team game. And in the end, it's down to the individuals. And I'm just, my concern would be the capacity of those individuals in any game, be it soccer, even at professional levels. And I know the argument there was, oh, they're being paid and whatever. Even at a professional level, everyone, Katie, has a threshold. Everyone has different capacity to be able to take on board different things. And my concern would lie with the individuals that didn't score or failed to score or failed to save a penalty. And that's all I want to say on the matter. I think it should be considered. As I say, it is a team effort. When it goes to something like that, it becomes individual. And that's where I really have a concern, is the capacity for those individuals even to go out there and take, whether you're successful in your penalty or not. The capacity to take that on is huge. Okay, it's exciting. Yes, it sensationalises the game. But imagine the sensation as well if it ran on to sudden death. I'd imagine they would have absolutely battled it out, as they had done, until they dropped on the field. And so, you know, that's just my thought for today, okay, is with the capacity of individuals.
Definitely, Connie. Well, my heart was in the same. I was thinking this could haunt you for the rest of your days if you just mishit it or that. Thanks for that, Connie. And a very quick one for Sean before I go. Sean?
Katie, how are you? I was at the game, Katie, and like when I was standing behind the goals when Nicky touched the ball and went out for a 65. And when the point went over, like obviously it was a draw and the time was up. But if the referee just said, puck the ball out, next score is going to win anyway, it would have been a perfect example.
Well, that's what Connie was saying there, Sean, wasn't it? A sudden death.
It was. Well, you don't even have to call it a sudden death. Like, as children, we were told next score wins just to get before it gets too dark. And it would have been ideal if that happened on Saturday night. And the penalties is no way to finish a game, especially a game of hurling. And when you puck the ball out, no team has the advantage. It's not like rugby where you can hold up the ball for 5 minutes and keep on going and do your phases, or like soccer where you can control the ball. Like when you puck the ball out to the halfway line or into the half forwards, it's every man for himself. And it's a pity it didn't finish like that.
Yeah, okay, that's John. And then before I let you go, John, would you be in favour of sudden death? Would it beat penalties?
I would be in favour of sudden death if it were the replay. I would go for the replay first, and then if the replay happened to be finishing level, I would definitely then say go for sudden death.
Or Sean doesn't like sudden death, and to be fair to him, he would have next score
I
wins.
Would,
yeah, next score wins. Yeah.
Next score yeah, wins. Yeah. Over I, and done with.
Yeah.
I would have to say that promoters of the game of hurling would wish to see that over and over and over again, and games like it. So I would say the more you can expose the population of our young people in Ireland to that, the more we'll see hurling thriving.
Thanks for that, John. And Sean and John, but I want to take a quick break. We have a couple of more calls on this after these.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
And we're talking about that penalty shootout on Saturday evening. And Martin, good afternoon.
Hello, Casey, how are you?
You don't have a problem with the penalty shootout, is that right?
I don't have any problem with it. It's just thrilling to watch and everything else. But the reason that the penalty shootout was brought in was to finish the matches. They had to finish it some way. And I don't agree with the first score that some of your comments were saying there.
Why not?
Pressure comes on a referee in that situation. If he gives a foul, a free, Oh, he gave the match to Limerick, or he gave the match to Cork by doing that. So the pressure, too much pressure on a referee to get it right in that situation on the next score. But the reason that the penalty, the reason that the matches have to finish and the split season was brought in was because club players didn't get a fair crack at the whip. When I was playing, we played one championship match, and you were gone for the year if you were bit. If you won and if you were lucky, you keep going. But now they have a group team system, and you play three or four matches. And if you're playing one match in April and one match in July, you can't keep your players at home. The J1 visits and all the students are travelling now. So by having it starting in September, you have all your players back from holiday and you have your county players back with you. But while the county are hurling... hello, Katie, are you there?
I'm listening. I'm thinking. So you think the split season solution was the right decision?
Something had to give. Something had to give in the whole situation. It couldn't stay going the way it was going. Now, while we have the split season, our club players here, they play league matches, five league matches against the other teams around in the group system, and they play divisional group matches as well. That's a straight knockout. And we have loads of matches without our county players. And then when the season is over and the Ireland is played, all your top players are back and the real championship starts. And they're playing in September and October and your county final is in November.
I think a lot of this, people's views on this are very much coloured by the county that they're in to a large degree in terms of where the intercounty involvement begins and ends.
Yeah, I understand that. But it has to finish at somewhere. You can't just drag it out just for the sake of dragging it out. That's not promoting anything.
Oh, well,
your club players are left waiting at home. Can't play.
But it's not the dragging out. I mean, it's how it was done ever thus. It was
It wasn't working. It wasn't working. The only people that was working was for the two teams that were in the All-Ireland final. Everybody else was held up with their championship. Munster Club couldn't go ahead. Leinster Club couldn't go ahead. Because those teams weren't ready to play. And they went on into Christmas. And that didn't suit anybody. And it's not nice going to a match in the end of November and December to watch two top club teams playing. It's lovely the way they're playing now. You see real good games now at the end of the club season.
Do you think, John Arnold's point was that the GAA have missed out on all the promotion you get from... Do you know the profile that the intercounty matches give the game generally?
Yeah. If you just say that you replay like next Saturday for which they're talking about there, and Limerick would be full or Cork would be full, and that's fine. And it might and it mightn't. At €50 a go, families can't say coming up with the €50 a shot every time either. But anyway, just say they play next Saturday, and Dublin and Kildare play next Saturday or Sunday or whenever they play, and the losers of that match then go on out the following week. Now you'll have people ringing you in saying, oh, they're playing 3 weeks in a row. They're not professionals. This isn't fair. And they went to extra time and they went to extra time again. There's nothing to say that the next match wouldn't go to extra time.
And you almost certainly would, the way that they're so evenly matched.
Yeah, and then you have a problem again.
Okay, so... You say go with the penalties is the best way to decide and not drag it out.
That's what
right.
I tried to say to you.
Okay,
and
Martin.
I think the match has to finish on the day. That's my point.
Okay.
And I think it has benefited club players way more than the way when I was hurling. That system wasn't working. And we were losing players all over. They were just gone after the first round of the championship. And we never saw them again.
Okay, thanks.
That wasn't promoting hurling. Okay, Katie.
Thanks, Martin.
Thank
appreciate
you.
The point. Right. Tony, quickly.
Hello, Katie. How are you?
Yeah, where are you on this one, Tony?
I'm down here in Mitchelstown. I was just saying there that it shouldn't have gone to penalties. It should have been a replay and leave all the patrons in free for the next match.
Oh, God, I don't see the GAA doing that now, Tony. whatever else.
They should be seen to give something back now, to be fair.
But when would it be? Like when would they find time for it?
Only themselves to blame now for that.
I know, but you know, as they say,
they crunched the whole lot into a couple of weeks. It's ridiculous.
Did you enjoy the match, Tony?
I enjoyed the match. I did indeed. Very tense, I tell you. And it could have gone either way. But in all fairness now, Cork came out of the right side of it.
They did.
But there's no doubt, as what one of your callers was saying, they're putting terrible pressure on amateur players.
Yeah. Do you think you'll see Limerick again?
Well, I'd be very worried if we do.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, definitely, Limerick's year isn't over yet, that's for sure.
Not at all. They're not gone away at all. They're not a great team like them. Don't fall away overnight.
Yeah. Tony, thanks for that. Appreciate the call. That's a Cork fan there, Tony. With that perspective on it. Now, another completely different perspective on that match. Dennis, good afternoon.
Hello, Katie.
Yeah, Dennis, you got in touch with us on a completely different point, but also to do with that match. And it's something that I hadn't actually thought about. And it's a really interesting point because you're colourblind yourself, Dennis.
Yeah, I'd been on to Joe actually about a year ago when the rugby match came on between Ireland and Wales. And between myself and Joe anyway, and getting on to the IRFU and the Six Nations and World Rugby, apparently, because of our conversation, Wales and Ireland will no longer play in green and red again in the same stadium. So one of the teams will have to use the away jersey to facilitate the 1 in 12 men that are colourblind and the 1 in 200 females that are colourblind.
So I was surprised at that figure, I have to say. 1 in 12 men are colourblind.
Yeah, 1 in 12 men couldn't really watch that match properly on the TV on Saturday evening.
And just explain to people, Dennis, yeah, the specific problem that you have with colour, with those colours.
Most people that are colourblind are red, green, brown colourblind. So you can't tell the difference between red and green and brown, depending on the shade of each colour. But generally speaking, those are the three colours that cause people to pot the wrong ball in snooker, to pass to the wrong player in a match, to go get your eyes go sore watching a television coverage of a match where the teams are green and brown and it would drive you demented.
So when you were watching that match on Saturday, what do you see in terms of... like, is there a differentiation in shade or...
When you get up close and you might recognise the player's number or something, you might be able to tell. But from a distance, which the camera is most of the time, you cannot tell. The only way to tell is when the ball comes out of the melee and the player runs in one direction, you reckon that's a Cork guy. And if it's running in the other direction, that's a Limerick guy. But other than that, you haven't got a clue which guy is which. So I can only imagine there's one or two players in the squads that are colourblind or probably afraid to admit the minor disability that it is and maybe didn't play well the last time Cork and Limerick played, and maybe one of the reasons was they passed the ball to the wrong player or something like that. But a lot of people don't like to admit to it.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm thinking that if it's 1 in 12, it's almost inevitable that a panel will have maybe one or two players that will struggle to tell the difference between red and green. And you can imagine the stress of knowing as you're coming up to a match that that's going to be a factor for you.
Yeah, and you'd be obviously afraid to say it to the manager because he mightn't pick you for that particular reason. And there's absolutely no need for that to happen. And why is GAA 11 out of 12 rather than 12 out of 12?
I know that there is actual guidelines, very strong guidelines for soccer. We're bringing up the difference there again with the soccer. But I know they do, FIFA have very strong guidelines in relation to teams having to use an away jersey if those two colours end up playing each other.
Well, the Six Nations did, would you believe, change their tack on that. Because of a call myself and Joe had together about maybe 18 months ago. And so the last time Ireland played Wales, you might remember they played in an awful-looking white jersey, which wasn't our fault. So normally they would have played in green. So therefore, that when Ireland played last February, we were able to watch the match.
So, and again, of course, I'm just thinking, as we were saying there to our last callers, Limerick and Cork could well be back together again for the final.
Yes, it's just something that's totally unnecessary. I remember during the black and white era, I remember Down played Kerry in the late 60s, and Down, I think they played in black shorts instead of white, or some other colour other than white shorts. And there was the famous snooker commentary where the guy said that for those of you in black and white, the yellow is beside the pink.
Oh, the pink is next to the green. That's the famous Ted Lowe one. Yeah. For those watching this in black and white, the pink is next to the green.
And I think there was a soccer commentator that said something similar years ago back in the 60s and in the UK. So, yeah, but it's as funny as it might sound, it's just an inconvenience that's not necessary. It's just a matter of changing a strip in some way that would make it recognise them, not just for the players who could end up passing to the wrong player inadvertently, but for the spectators who would like to enjoy watching the match.
I wonder though, is there like, there is some team, some players, some spectators, they would, you know, there's a lot of psychological notions around, you know, playing in your own colours, in your own jersey, not in the away jersey.
Wow.
Would there be, I wonder, a backlash if...
Well, God help them if that's the case, yeah. It'd be like this poor guy taking the penalty, and people were saying, you know, there's awful pressure in amateurs taking a penalty. Well, they'd never play golf then, would they, in interprovincial or interclub golf or open championship golf, where you have to, every shot is a penalty.
God, you've no pity for them at all, Dennis, do you?
No, I'm not saying that at all. I'm just saying that it's all relative, you know. Like if you play individual sports, you're doing that all the time. Yeah. Under pressure, you know, whether it's golf or tennis or whatever, particularly golf, if there's a huge crowd watching and you're there on your own, nobody to help you. So it's just part of sport. That's true. Pressure is the part of the sport. I mean, that's the whole idea, is that you put yourself under pressure and you achieve your best person that you can be.
Dennis, we asked the GAA about this, and they said, would you believe this, that this is the first time that this has been brought to our attention. It's not just a kind of astonishing, actually, but they say this is the first time this has been brought to our attention, but we would be happy to liaise with our broadcast partners on the issue. So there you are.
Well,
Dennis, you might change the world again.
Well, we might go and do another Six Nations on it, but being the first time, that's more commentary on the GAA than it is on the people who are maybe afraid to say anything. So maybe they need to listen a bit better.
Yeah, absolutely. Dennis, thanks for that. Really okay, interesting, Jane. Very interesting fact that had not come our way before, and indeed apparently not come the GAA's way before. We'll take a break.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Now, we're going to move on for now because I want to get to this. A listener got in touch to say they were demented trying to sort out their lawn because foxes, urban foxes, were constantly coming into their garden and digging holes. And they were not that impressed with a neighbour who was actually feeding the foxes. And they felt they were drawing these foxes in. They said you could look out and that these foxes are sunning themselves on the flat roofs and the back gardens of the area. And that they were being drawn there because a neighbour was feeding them. Kim, good afternoon.
Hi, how are you?
You love foxes, Kim.
I do. I absolutely do. I think we have encroached an awful lot on their territory, so I kind of try my best to, I suppose, look after them in their own little bit that they have left. I have a couple of them out the back that have lived there. Their whole family have lived there on and off for nearly 10 years now.
And do you feed them?
I do. I will throw stuff out to the back, or I'm cautious about where I put the food. But if you feed foxes, they tend not to poop where they eat.
And now, are you in an urban environment? Would you have like...
I am. I live in an apartment.
You live in an apartment?
I live in a duplex apartment. So I have, but at the back of where I live, there's like a ravine where there's a little river. So that's where they den. And it's untouched.
And tell me, is there any issues with, like, the listener who got in touch with us had a real issue with foxes digging holes in their garden?
They will dig to hide their food. So obviously they're getting food sources and they're hiding them. But if you don't want them in your garden, you can put things like lavender out, which is non-toxic and it doesn't harm them. And they just tend to find another place to dig their holes. We kind of built on their land rather than the other way around. So to try and live with them as harmoniously as possible.
Okay, so what do you feed them?
They're probably a better diet than most. They'll get chicken. They'll get leftover steak. They love eggs. They love cheese. They eat cat food, which is mainly what I'd give them. Obviously, then if there's a roast dinner going, they'll get all the leftovers apart from kind of the main bones. So they're fed pretty well.
So are you've kind of made pets of these foxes, have you?
No, I don't pet them. One originally years ago, I did look after one and he was injured. So I gave him medication and kind of nursed him back to health with the help of a wildlife sanctuary. He used to eat out of my hand, but I would never pet them. They're not pets. And I know not everyone is as nice to them as I would be. So I don't want them to become too accustomed to humans. So they will eat in the front garden. They will kind of sit in the front gardens, but they won't. Like, I would never pet them. They aren't pets. They're still wild animals.
But is it right, though, to feed wild animals, like, from your kitchen like that? Like, are they not better off learning how to fend for themselves?
And they're going to fend for themselves in what? People's dustbins? Because we've already built and we're already encroaching on their land. We've got, like, they're trying to adapt to the way we have created the world around them. So if we can help a little bit, rather than them digging out of people's bins, then yeah, I have no problem feeding them.
And has anyone in your neighbourhood taken issue with you? You have
no,
this relationship, shall we say, with the foxes?
With the relationship. Actually, no. I live, thankfully, in a very nice area where there are other people who also feed the foxes. There was an old lady who lived across the road. She sadly passed away in November. They were her... Like, she used to love going out and feeding them. That was her thing. She'd go and watch them for hours. And every year, the same family, the older ones then have cubs. So the same family has stayed in the area. Where I am, I'm quite lucky. It is urban, but it also has a little small park. And as I said, the ravine at the back. So they have the safety of nature and the wild. But also, they still live near a main road, which sadly does get the odd one or two.
Mm-hmm. I've noticed myself just around the city and around where I am, there is a lot more. You see urban, either there is more of them or they're bolder and less nervous of humans, that you see them a lot more often in the daytime.
So there is a study that is suggesting that because of the fact that we're building more on their green land, that they are trying to adapt to us. So they're becoming more like, say, a small dog or kind of a cat. And they're so smart. So they're learning how to adapt to their environment. And if that means to them that they see humans as a source of food, that's why we're seeing more of them, because they're becoming not as afraid, because that is their only source of food. Like the ones in the city centre, where are they meant to get their food from? We've built on everything that's green.
Yeah. Ken, will you hang on there? I want to bring
of course.
I want to bring in Morris. Morris, good afternoon.
Hi, Katie. How are you?
I'm good, Morris. You are not calling from a city duplex, are you?
I'm not, no. And no, I have to say I'm farming, but I have to say I admire Kim for her love of the wildlife and love of the foxes. The only thing I might say to Kim is it's not actually helpful feeding them, because it kind of messes up with their natural behaviour. Their skills as hunters is disrupted, you know. And, you know, when you feed a fox, he'll only eat a certain amount, but he's going to bury most of it. That's like a dog will do. And then you're going to have issues with, you know, rotten food, rotten carcasses like chicken and stuff like that, which actually isn't a good idea to feed them chicken. I don't know, does Kim feed them raw chicken or cooked chicken?
No, God, no, it'd be cooked and it's not with the bones. It's off the bones, so it's like chicken.
Okay,
rat.
That's a good idea.
It's chicken fillet, Mark.
Okay, not from Lidl or somewhere. Okay, that's fine anyway. But wait, and I tell you, or say to you, Kim, I think what would be a better idea for people in the urban areas, I have it here on my farm, so I have it kind of wild, okay? I'm seeing people go up and down my road and they look at my lawn and they go, oh, geez, he's some lazy shagger that he wouldn't have his lawn cut. But it's so important, and perhaps this would be a better idea for people in urban areas, to leave their gardens and their lawns. We actually have 2 million domestic gardens in Ireland. That equates to about 360,000 acres. So if we left them, like, kind of grow naturally, have your high grasses, maybe plant a few fruit trees, a few nut trees, then the fox doesn't have to be fed. He'll come into your little area there. You mentioned at the back of your flat complex that you have a kind of a river. That's beautiful. And you'd have a kind of an area of kind of ground there that you could perhaps plant some part of it, that you'll have. The foxes will naturally survive themselves. They've done it for millennia. The reason why I think it's a bad idea, you're actually encouraging kind of disease among foxes when you have too much of them gathered in the one area. They will have an issue with a disease, you know, the topical disease called mange, and that will spread when there's too many of them in the same vicinity. But also they actually contract and spread a disease called leptospirosis. Now, that's a nasty disease, bacterial disease, and it actually, in humans, it can actually cause miscarriages. Because I knew that from you know, we have to vaccinate cows for that on the farm. So, yeah, I get where you're coming from, Kim, and fair play to you. And it's lovely to hear of people in the city. I just love it when I hear it, because you'd be often wondering, are you just all caught up in the Wi-Fi and caught up in social media, and maybe you're not perhaps so caught up in nature, which is so important.
But how do you know so much about foxes, Maurice?
Well, I'm farming all my life, Katie, and, you know, I see them regularly in the nighttime when I'm out checking my sheep. I'll see the foxes under lamp, you know, because I'll be checking my sheep and I'll see them there in amongst the lambs and stuff. Now, listen.
Well, can I ask you about that, actually? Because I heard, this was up in the Dáil there in the last few weeks. I heard, I think it was it Michael Collins, the Independent Ireland TD, or was it Danny Healy-Ray? They were both, there's a bill, people for profit are bringing in a bill about fox hunting. And Michael Collins was raising the point. They're saying that foxes are pests, that there's like 200,000 of them there. And Danny Healy-Ray was saying that they're like, the farmers are giving out to them, are on the phone to them all the time, saying the foxes are taking their hens and their lambs and they need to be controlled.
Yeah. You want my take on it, do you?
Well, what are the, what you know, as you're a farmer in the
they're
middle of that, you're going out checking
now.
Your lambs.
You're throwing me under the bus, Katie. Okay, so here's the thing, right? Here's the thing. I think in rural Ireland, Katie, we have a bit of an issue with the left side politics coming from Dublin. You know, this is the people before profits bill going through the Dáil. You know, we kind of feel that we're being attacked, you know, that there's, you know, where would it stop if there's the ban on fox hunting? Where would it stop? Would it be pint-to-pint racing after it? Would it be hair coursing? Would it be this, would it be that? And look, you're speaking, Katie, to the biggest animal lover that you'll ever find. I found a fox about 2 years ago in a ditch on the farm. My two terriers were blagarding it, barking ahead, and the fox had himself protected and he was just snarling. But he was. I didn't know whether he was injured or what, was he diseased. So anyway, I put away my two dogs. I threw a coat over the fox and put him into a little barn. And I started, like him, I bought a can of dog food, see what he eat the dog food. I tried to protect him. I tried to see would he actually survive. But before Creator, he died 2 days later. So this is coming from a farmer from both sides. Do you get me? I have just a love of foxes, of all wildlife. But I'll tell you this, Katie. Okay. In the farm, in the rural Ireland, on farms and stuff, you know, ground nesting birds are in serious decline. Over 70%, and this isn't Maurice Sleamy saying it. This is UCD. You know, they done a study. So over 70% of our ground nesting birds are in decline. You know,
is this because of foxes?
Well, the foxes is one of the main predators of ground nesting birds, Katie, because what it is, you know, you'll have the ground nesting birds will nest in grass and long grass and places like that, and you'll have the little nest, and you'll have the eggs and the chicks. And, of course, this is massive protein for foxes. Not only foxes, you'll have wild, you'll have the pine marten, you'll have the badgers, you'll have stoats, you'll have mink, you know. But basically, if you allow anything in the ecosystem to become too powerful, well, something else suffers, you know.
And is that the view that there's too many foxes now?
I would say I see a lot more foxes than I ever did before. And I was talking last Friday on TFFM with Fran Corey, and Fran said when he came from England there on the ferry and he landed in Dublin there a couple of weeks ago, I think he saw two foxes on when he came across. I think it was the foxes he saw before the humans. So obviously there's a lot of them above in Dublin. And you see, the thing is, when you allow them to be kind of almost domesticated, they lose their natural ability. And I would just say to people, you know, in urban areas, it is, you know, rather than having this manicured lawn.
Are you saying to Kim, don't stop feeding them, and to the other Kims out there?
Stop feeding them.
Can I just say, we're not in any way suggesting that there's anything wrong with the little chicken, but just don't give it to the foxes.
As a farmer, I understand. There are two sides to it. And I do understand that they are obviously going to kill livestock and that's not okay. But I also, I don't sit there and, like, they're not pets. I don't put out bowls for them to eat. In the winter time when food is scarce, they will get thrown food. I'm not feeding them every day, but I do feel that the amount of building that is going on at the moment, they have less and less areas to scavenge from. They're scavenging from bins, which is upsetting, obviously, everybody then, because they're destroying and throwing rubbish all over the roads. If they're getting a chicken breast from me, they go down the back. There's badgers, there's all sorts, there's little voles. I have a whole wildlife ecosystem at the back of my house, which is untouched. Yes, they do get fed, but in relation to
does the fox eat the vole? No, is there a little...
They I'm sure there's rats and all sorts down at that river. Like, there's a river. So where there's water and a natural source of food and water, there inevitably is going to be voles, because my cat has also brought one of those to the doorstep. Like, there are inevitably loads of things kind of floating around. But I don't have rats in the car park. We don't have, like, rodents running around. And I do think that's largely because of the foxes and possibly the couple of cats that live in the area.
Okay,
but I don't agree with fox hunting for fun. I understand how farmers may need to do it to save their wild stock, but in relation to it being for fun or for sport, no, I think that's so unbelievably wrong.
That's okay. Kim, hang on for us there. Maurice, hang on. We have to take a break, but we'll be back on this in a minute.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
We're talking to Kim, who is leaving out a gourmet tasting menu for the foxes that come into her back garden. Everything from cat food to chicken fillets. and again, just to say, Morris says, should not be giving those foxes chicken. And I think we mentioned little chicken, not that there is anything at all wrong with little chicken. I eat it all the time. But Morris is not to be given you should not be feeding the foxes, and that's not the way to go. Will you hang on, both of you, because I've got Sinead on the other line. Sinead.
Hi, Casey. How are you?
Sinead, what do you think? Is it right to feed foxes in a domestic kind of a habitat, like an urban fox?
I live in Drumcondra beside Croke Park, so it's a busy urban area, and we have Clonliffe College beside us, which used to be a haven for wildlife, but unfortunately there's a lot of development and building construction work happening there at the moment, There's a Maldron Hotel being constructed with 8 stories, and Hines are looking to build a 14-storey apartment block, but they've had to go back and to the drawing board, and they're coming back with new plans in the near future. So from my perspective, we are encroaching on the habitat and the homes of our wildlife, and we're giving them, they have to survive, they've every right to survive. So they are coming into our gardens more, coming onto our streets. They're being driven out from their natural habitat. Now, I don't have a large back garden. I have a small back garden. But during COVID, I did see the foxes walking up and down the road I live on. And last winter, when we had a weather warning for low temperatures, I did leave. I happened to have cat food in the house. And I left out some cat food and it was gone the next morning. But I don't know what animal ate it, whether it was,
I was gonna say, yeah, quite a few cats roaming around as well. Yeah.
But I just feel, and then there was one of our urban foxes was killed on our road by a car, and the carcass was left on the road for about 4 days before Dublin City Council came and collected it. And it was a lovely mature fox. I am totally against fox hunting, and I feel it's a relic from our colonial past, and even in Great Britain, it's banned. So it's quite ironic that it's still happening here in Ireland. I'm not an expert in this area. I'm just somebody, an animal lover, giving my opinion.
And
but if there is a problem with foxes and they have to be controlled, okay, that's another discussion. But the way to control it is not by terrorising it by men and women on horseback and packs of hounds. Terrorising it, and then when they're exhausted and they go underground, they're dug out. That's not sport. That's just barbarism.
Sinead, do you still feed the foxes in that come into your area?
No, I only did it that time, Katie, because there was a weather warning saying the temperatures were very low. So I that was the only time I did it.
But you think you're basically coming at it from the same perspective as Kim, that we're basically encroaching on their natural habitat,
we're surrounding
them
like amoeba. I mean, they've got no, you know, it's everybody has a right to life and to play fair. They need their own space. They don't want to be coming into our areas. You know, they're wild creatures. They're shy. They don't want to be around humans. But if we're encroaching on their home and on their habitat, it's obvious. What are they going to do if there's, like, you know, if you saw Planlith College now, it's like the public can't get into it, it's closed off. Yeah. But it's terribly sad. That was a beautiful little sanctuary of, because a lot of people have small gardens in that area, and it was like a lung that we all breathed through to be able to go into that green space with our dogs, with our children, just to go for a walk. And it's been closed off now for, I don't know, 4 or 5 years. Yeah. It will be reopened when it's built. But can you imagine the devastation for the wildlife there? You know, there's otters, I think there's badgers. You know, it's terrible, you know. And we have to be mindful of the wildlife. And if the wildlife then are coming onto our land, it's our fault that they're doing it, you know.
Okay, Sinead, thank you for that. I've got Frankie on another line. Frankie, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. How are you doing?
Good, Frankie. Where do you stand on this feeding urban foxes?
I'll tell you where I stand. I'm a farmer in the Midlands, and we would have about 150, it's sheep country around here, it's about 150 sheep, and of course lambing season, and it's also fox country.
Yeah.
And there is no problem with foxes killing lambs here.
Really?
No. We've never had an issue with it. Now, I have to take... I was in the Dáil actually listening to Danny Healy's raised objection to Ruth Coppinger's proposal to ban fox hunting. And he says that they're a huge threat to farmers. But the Chagas webinar 2025, the sheep webinar, there's no mention, it's an hour long, there's no mention about threat of foxes to lambs. Most farmers lamb their ewes inside for lambing. There's no threat to foxes. Now, mountain hill
farmers...
I was
going to say hill farmers now wouldn't be lambing their ewes.
Now, down in Kerry might have an issue, but they might have an issue also with crows. But, like, Michael Healy raised Minister for Agriculture, he should put things in place there to grant some place for them to have sheds to lamb.
Okay, well, Michael Healy Ray, just to be clear, is not the Minister for Agriculture. He's a Minister of State in the Department of Agriculture with responsibility for forestry.
Sorry. But there could be things put in place to support them farmers to monitor the sheep better for things like this. But he also described them as a pest species. Foxes are not a pest species, and they're very important for keeping down vermin, rats and mice. And he said there was 200,000 foxes in the country. There's no statistics to back that up.
Yeah, I wonder where that statistic came from, actually.
I don't know where that came from. But regarding the threat to ground nesting birds, now I'm waiting on statistics back from Breeding Waders Ireland and Birdwatch Ireland. But, you know, they can be a predator, but it's all about the food chain when it comes to foxes. Like I would have had a fox take hens years ago here. But I reinforced my chicken coop with electric fence. But my chicken coop is open the last year, and a fox goes by it every night because I have trail cameras everywhere. And ironically enough, it doesn't go in and touch their hens anymore.
Why is that?
I do not know. It's all about the food chain. There's, you know, and that foxes, their food chain is not just pheasants, it's not just curlews or eggs or ground nesting birds. It's a wide range, and their most preferred food chain is voles. Or rats, but it's mostly voles, and they dig for worms as well.
So you're saying that you have a fox that strolls past literally a chicken.
Exactly, yeah.
And doesn't look sideways at it.
Doesn't go near it. Now, I do have a German Shepherd dog, but there's kind of a mutual respect with them.
Ah, now, you didn't mention the dog, Frankie. That might be a major part of the equation.
That could be, but I've often seen the fox outside the house, in the front of the house, and the dog sitting there looking at him as well. Now, the fox could easily get in there. The dog sometimes, during the winter time, is always in at night. He stays in at night. Okay. But, you know, that's what I'm saying. They don't always go. But it's up to anybody who has hens or fowl to reinforce their coop properly, and they won't have an issue with foxes or the pine marten.
OK, will you hang on, Frankie? I just need to take my last break. We'll be back after this.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
And we've only got a minute left. But Maurice, do you want to just respond to Frankie there? He's saying that they're not the big predator of the ground nesting birds.
Frankie is wrong there, I'm afraid. You know, this is a study by UCD, you know, and as regards foxes taking lambs, there must be something wrong with the lambs and the birds in leash, because they definitely take them down in Tipperary. There must be a nicer type of bird down here. But like I've had over the last few years, I could maybe have 5 or 6 lambs taken every year. And if you put that into monetary value, Katie, it would be roughly around €1,000 annually, you know, by the time that lamb, if he survived, by the time he'd be finished. So, but regardless, Katie, if I could just say one little thing before I go.
You literally have 2 seconds.
Garden for wildlife. All the people in the urban areas, garden for wildlife. And you don't have to feed the foxes then, okay? Just garden for wildlife.
Okay.
Fruit trees, apple trees, nut trees and long grasses and flowers and stuff. That's all you need. Don't feed them. That's all.
Okay, that's it. Kim, that's the message to you there. Maurice, we'll have to leave that there. Frankie, thanks for getting in touch.